You are listening to The Stack, first podcast on the 25th of April, 2015, on Monocle 24.
Industry developments assessed by our expert friends, new issues revealed and explained by the people that created them. From asking the big questions in Australia to the very best in contemporary culture in London, reviewing, reflecting and reading into the print story today on The Stack. Today, we'll be discussing a big change announced by the fashion industry staple Women's Wear Daily in New York. Then we'll be speaking to the general manager of Australian publishing sensation Dumbo Feather as she visits Midori House.
The kind of attention and love and care that goes into this magazine, both design and content copy-wise, is with the intention that people can hold it and keep it.
Plus, we'll be joined by the editor of one of our favorite titles, Printed Pages. All that coming up on this edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tyler Brulight. Now, American publication Women's Wear Daily, or WWD, has built up a reputation over its more than a century of operation for being the mouth and ears of the fashion industry. Hypercurrent, always relevant, timeliness in this sector of all sectors has always been key. Well, now WWD has announced that it will stop publishing its daily print edition, opting for a weekly version instead. Well, to assess what this means for the industry, of course, insiders and many others, and a view on the printed fashion industry sector, we are joined on the line from Singapore by Monocle 24's friend and regular luxury market contributor, Sagra Marseille-Drosen. Hello, Sagra.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Sagra, what are you going to do on all of these long flights when so many people, not just in the fashion sector, in retail, property developers, so often I would see people with their three or four copies from across the week stuffed into a tote bag, and you know, that would give them sort of a good sort of 3 or 4 hours reading in flight. Are you only just going to be reading it off your iPad now?
Well, you know, I have seen that as well, and I have been doing that myself. So I'm a little bit nostalgic of losing that to carry along with me.
The move to weekly, does that make sense for the sector, do you think?
I think it does make sense, and I think it's just actually in a way replicating that behavior that we as readers of WWD were already doing. I think, you know, in a way, I think daily print information is becoming a little bit of a luxury for all of us. Sometimes we don't have the time or the space to do it, but we still love to have the print with us, and moving to this weekly format, I think, is just reflecting the habits of the readership, of the readers of Women's Wear Daily.
Mm. Sagra, just before we go, in an era also where you see Bloomberg becoming very strong, even you mentioned the New York Times, you know, a lot of, let's say, traditional news wire outlets, newspapers, have just become much stronger at actually covering retail, the luxury sector, fashion in general. Does Women's Wear Daily still have a place, though? Does it still have a unique position that, let's say, Bloomberg's wire service or Reuters or certainly the New York Times maybe aren't offering or delivering?
Yes, I absolutely believe that they do, because they are the authority. Still today, despite the rise of other media outlets that comment on the news of the sector, I still think that Women's Wear Daily is the authority for this industry. I think the bigger challenge is that, you know, their business is the daily news. Obviously, they're still going to be providing our kind of digital daily bulletins on that, which is, I think, what people are actually reading these days. But it will be interesting. I mean, I'm quite interested to see what the weekly edition is going to look like and whether they will be able to carve yet another niche in the readership.
I will be assessing that certainly over these airwaves for sure. Sagra Marseille-Drosen in Singapore for us. You are listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. When we come back in a moment, we'll be talking to Rob Alderson, editor-in-chief of Printed Pages. Stay with us.
On the menu, we explore the delicious, diverse, and eminently digestible world of food, drink, and hospitality every week. Join me, Marcus Hippi, as I meet everyone from the bakers to the makers who are redefining the culinary landscape.
Many people think that it might be gamey somehow because these are hairy animals that have horns, but it's quite the opposite. I think the milk has a cleaner, sweeter flavor than cow milk.
We'll also head to Kenji's kitchen for a roundup of restaurant reviews, interviews with top chefs, and trade secrets with our Asia editor-at-large, Kenji Hall, in Tokyo and beyond.
The beer market has been changing rapidly for some time now. It seems like almost every month, a new pub that specializes in craft beer is opening.
All that and even a dinner party soundtrack recommendation, so your ears are catered for as well as your belly. A healthy serving of the finest free-range fare to sate your radio appetite each week. That's the menu on Monocle 24.
And you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé. And I'm happy to say I'm joined in Studio 2 here by Rob Alderson, Editor-in-Chief of Printed Pages, the beautifully proportioned magazine offshoot of the It's Nice That website. And he's clutching, he's clutching a pair of gleaming copies. It is just hit newsstand at the back end of this week. And for those of our listeners, you'd really sort of have to be living under a bungalow and a couple of rocks not to know what your magazine's all about. But to new listeners of the program who don't know the title and who do not know the website, just give us the one paragraph hit as to what Printed Pages is.
So I suppose as much as anything, what we're trying to do is, It's Nice That is all about championing creativity across the art and design world, particularly focused on graphic design, illustration and photography. And Printed Pages is our printed offshoot, as you say, of that. The really key thing with it for us is it's all about accessibility. We get very, very frustrated. There's a lot of discussion around art and design and creativity in general that can be very impenetrable. And I suppose what we try and do in a hopefully very beautiful, very considered and quite intelligent, not dumbed down way, is to really champion people and projects and work that we love, but you don't have to have been to art school or have a PhD to really get it.
Now, this issue has a split cover on a very provocative. They might be Brits, they could be Norwegians, they could be Dutch, but we've got a rather large gentleman and a rather large woman spread out on the beach. This is maybe a little bit of a celebration that the sun is coming out in this this part of the hemisphere. When we get inside the magazine, Rob, there's just this wonderful story that you have on one of the founders of Wieden and Kennedy, of course, probably... arguably, after Nike, the other big export out of the state of Oregon, and certainly very much an engine behind Nike as well, and just this wonderful illustration, and it's just this kind of great piece of reportage done by the illustrator. I'm just looking for who illustrated the piece for you.
It's Sam Island.
Yeah. A slightly sort of Opie-esque style, but meets Tintin. I'm sort of, yeah, I guess the eyes in illustrator style remind you a little bit of Julian Opie, but then it's got this sort of, you know, sort of lively, sort of friendly feel about it. Just tell us a little bit about the piece and how it made it to your pages.
I mean, for us, it's one of the most exciting pieces in there. It was actually an opportunity that came via the Design in Darba conference in Cape Town, which happens in February, which we've been lucky enough to partner with the last couple of years. And this year they had Dan as one of their speakers. And Dan is very, very difficult to get. He doesn't do press coverage, really. Mm. So there was this very rare opportunity while we were out in Cape Town to essentially do a piece with him. And we had one of those chats. And I think one of the things when you hear magazine editors talk, and I think we really wanted to do a few things in this magazine that felt a little bit more daring than maybe we'd allowed ourselves to be in previous issues. So we did interview Dan, and we've taken some quotes from that, and we've taken some quotes from his talk at Indaba as well. But really, it is inspired by the brilliant Gay Talese reportage article, Frank Sinatra Has a Cold, which is famously he got no access at all to Sinatra and had to piece this thing together by watching him in bars and that kind of thing. So we've kind of, it's a very deliberate homage, with apologies to Gay Talese, called Dan Wieden Is. And we kind of see him at a party, we see him in a bathroom, we see him drinking a cup of coffee, we see him on tour of a vineyard, and we kind of weave this narrative together, because I think with Dan it's a lot about what he says. Obviously, like you say, he's an extraordinary creative colossus, but it's also about how people react to him. because he is like that and because we imbue these kind of figures with such significance. Mm. So it was interesting at the party to see everyone kind of tense up when he arrived and that kind of thing. So for us, it's about us pushing maybe the editorial we've done in a slightly new and exciting direction.
Mm. Right, you've brought a number of titles in today, which we're going to talk about. But we're going to just go away for a very, very short second here because we're going to head to Australia back via Midori House. We're going to be talking about Dumbo Feather.
On the weekend edition, we like to relax a little. I'm Georgina Godwin, and you can join me as I look back at the last 7 days from Midori House, rustle through the papers to the accompaniment of our global playlist, and introduce you to some of the fascinating guests who've dropped in to see me here, such as Mr. Los Angeles himself, James Elroy.
Woof woof, hear the demon dog bark. He's got a 12-inch wanger that glows in the dark.
Publisher and author Arianna Huffington.
Bill Clinton, he said that the most important mistakes I made in my life I made when I was tired. Don't we all wish that he had had a good 8 hours sleep?
And Generation Xer, Douglas Copeland.
This is a very strange thing to see on radio, but I'm not pregnant at the moment.
So, you sit back and I'll take care of the weekend. The Weekend Edition, every Saturday and Sunday from 8 to 1500 hours on Monocle 24.
And you're listening to The Stack here on a Saturday with me, Tyler Brulé, also my guest today, Rob Alderson. Now, launching from the mantra that behind extraordinary ideas, there are extraordinary people, a little magazine was spawned with one core idea, to tell stories of passion and purpose. Since 2004, Dumbo Feather has had Australia talking with its individual brand of enlightening storytelling via its rather impressive quarterly magazine book hybrid. Monocle 24 producer Ben Ryland sat down with the magazine's general manager, Melian Havea, to find out how it all came about and what's behind that rather unusual choice of name.
Dumbo Feather is different. It's more than a magazine. It's a platform for meaningful storytelling and storytelling for change. And we do this through having conversations with extraordinary people, which is obviously the tagline of the mag. We started about 10 years ago. We were founded by a woman called Kate Beezer, who the story goes that she basically went into newsagents regularly looking for magazines that inspired her, looking for stories and people that made her hopeful and made her feel positive about humanity. And she didn't find anything. And so, as most of these great entrepreneurial stories go, she started it herself. She ran it basically as a labor of love for about 5 or 6 years. And she realized that as she was a mother of 2 or 3 kids and she's running this mag as well, it was quite unsustainable for her. And so Small Giants, which is the organization that that owns Dumbo Feather, came along and took over the mag because we were so passionate about this kind of format, this really unusual format of long-form journalism and long-form conversations. We found that if what's important in life is connecting both with yourself and with others and with the environment, which is what we really believe, then this is a really great format for allowing people to connect with these ideas and these stories and these people that are changing the world to kind of see how they might do the same.
Now, just flicking through the magazine, the design of the magazine is absolutely beautiful for one thing. The stock of the paper is tremendous. And there was one article here that really caught my attention. And just so our listeners can get a flavour of what Dumbo Feather is about, I'll just read the introduction. It's hard to imagine a world without colour, but that was once Neil Harbison's reality. The Catalan native was born with achromatopsia, which means he can only see in grayscale. His desire to experience colour led him to develop a technology with a cybernetics expert that converts the light frequencies of colour into vibrations which register as sound. 10 years ago, Neil had that technology permanently implanted into his head, profoundly altering his perception. In his world, colours become a symphony. I read this article just a few moments ago, and it's absolutely beautiful about how this man, there's a picture of him here with this little gadget attached to his head, and it quite literally colours become sounds in his mind, and he describes how he's visited different cities around the world and how different cities have a different sound to each one of them, and how different people can sound different. He compares the sound of the Queen to that of George Bush. It's a beautiful article, and it's quirky, but it's also very uplifting. Is that really sort of the perfect indication of what Dumbo Feather sets out to achieve?
Well, absolutely. We are trying to understand how different people, people that we're inspired by, people that are really making a difference in the world, how they see the world. And that's why Neil Harbison was so interesting for us. I mean, he's a human cyborg, you know. It's a kind of, his perception is different. And what can we learn from that? What can his perception teach us about our own humanity? That's, I guess, the central thesis of why we talk to these people, why we try and find out what their story is, everybody in the mag is extraordinary, but at the same time, everybody's ordinary.
Can I just ask a little bit about the design of the magazine and also, well, first of all, the name Dumbo Feather, where did that come from?
Sure. So Dumbo Feather is referencing the Disney film from the 50s, Dumbo the Elephant.
I was so hoping that would be your answer.
Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
So if you remember in the film, Dumbo was this orphaned, beautiful little elephant who had these huge ears, and he was outcast, and he found this little friend who gave him a feather, and the friend said, with this feather you can fly. But in actuality, he could fly all along. You know, he always had this, what made him unusual, what made him an outcast, those huge ears, was what also made him able to fly.
His weakness was his power.
Well, that's it. And yeah. I think that's the heart of what this magazine is about.
Now, the design of the magazine, the colours are stunning. What
so it's all it's all recycled. It's all recycled paper, all soy-based ink. We've decided to print locally in Australia, in Melbourne, which is where we're made. And we've done that very deliberately because, you know, we're not wanting to print hundreds of thousands of magazines. And we are actually quite disappointed, I suppose, appalled by the state of and the wasteful structure through which magazines are sold. So, you know, like half of them are pulped, and we just don't want to participate in that kind of a system or economy. But we, at the same time, we believe that things are important and something which people can hold and touch and smell. You know, you take it off the, just comes back from the printer, and you open up the box and it smells beautiful, and, you know, it's colourful and you can touch it. And this is something which people keep, the kind of attention and love and care that goes into this magazine, both design and content copy-wise, is with the intention that people can hold it and keep it, and it sits on their coffee table or on their bookshelf and is a constant reminder of this potential.
Melianne Havea, General Manager of the Australian title Dumbo Feather, talking to our Ben Ryland. She also, in that piece, she talked about the people behind the title, outfit called Small Giants, and you can also read about a very, very interesting investor group, and we talk about also one of their property projects in the current issue of the magazine, so check that out. Also, my guest in studio today is Rob Alderson, Editor-in-Chief of Printed Pages magazine. I can see some of the titles there. What a segue. I mean, we're talking about Dumbo Feather, and you've got Elephant in front of you. You knew what we were going to be chatting about today, clearly.
Just one of those beautiful coincidences.
Absolutely.
You occasionally get.
Now, Elephant comes up, of course, quite frequently on the program. You've brought this issue along today. Why? And just, again, for people who are not familiar with Elephant, what part of the newsstand does it occupy?
So Elephant is a kind of arts and culture journal run by Mark Valley, who a lot of people know through the Magma network of bookshops. And I was actually on with Mark, I think, 2 times ago. I was on this program, and Mark had just relaunched it. They relaunched for issue, I think it was 20. This is number 22. And I think I was really impressed with the redesign, but I think now, 3 issues on, you're really seeing it hitting its stride, which I think is a super exciting thing with magazines. It's all dedicated to New York, the art scene in New York, this issue. There's a beautiful section in the middle of brand new Elizabeth Payton images that she's curated herself from a series called Dark Incandescence. 20 artists who make New York, some really nice features. Hans Ulrich Obrist talking about 10 ideas that he never realised and wish he had. The content's fantastic. What I really wanted to talk about, though, what really struck me about this issue of Elephant, if you're familiar with it, the editor's letter essentially comes on the final page. Mark writes a piece called the Enditorial, which is the very last thing you read. And This is actually, he calls it an elegy.
We do that as well.
Absolutely. But it's, I think Mark's Elegy NY, it's an extraordinary, having gone through almost 200 pages of celebration of the New York art scene, Mark then writes this piece that essentially says that it's lost its soul and it's lost its way, and how actually that the kind of apogee of the 60s and 70s, when it was this great melting pot of possibility, has gone. And I thought that was really interesting. I can't remember that many times where I've seen an editor's letter that collides really with the content that you've just gone before, and you couldn't get away with that, I don't think, if it was the first thing you read.
No, and then it's just such a nice throw to where they're going to end up next as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think when you look at the newsstand or bookshelves at the moment, is there sort of a enough clarity and definition, when we see what Fries does, even within the English language space? Let's not even get to the German part of the newsstand or the Italian press as well. Crowded or enough definition and room for all in the sector, do you think?
I think there is enough room, but I think it's the responsibility of the editorial teams and the designers to make that differentiation. I think there is an awful lot of arts coverage that goes down the same kind of rabbit hole, and you end up with these similar artists being profiled, being written by the same writers, being talked about in the same, to go back to that word again, impenetrable language. And I think it's up to the, like I say, the individual magazines to make sure that they almost elbow themselves into a space that works. And that's what I feel that Elephant has done with this issue. I feel that they're starting to stake out a space that is their own, and that's super exciting.
You've got two more titles. I've got one beside me, but maybe you have Sleek. You've got the spring edition in front of you there. Maybe set up their stall for them for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So Sleek is a magazine out of Berlin, previously edited by Kevin Braddock, who a lot of people will know from Manzine and various other editorial projects. In autumn last year, Mario Lombardo, who was the creative director, took over the editorship, which I always think is an interesting narrative around magazines. I am someone who comes from a completely quite old school editorial background and have come into this space. So I always think it's interesting when you see creative directors who then move into the editor's seat and see how that works. Sometimes I think it's a recipe for disaster. I've seen it done really badly, and you have these beautiful magazines that end up with no kind of content heft at all by the time you actually
We're a little bit in that territory. I was talking, we were in Lisbon last week at a conference, and we had a conversation with a number of individuals on and off stage that, yes, I mean, of course, there is this proliferation of print. That's largely why this program is here. But there are a lot of wonderfully and sometimes not so wonderfully art-directed pages, but just not a lot to support them from a foundation point of view. So
absolutely. I know it's one of Jeremy Leslie from Mag Culture's real kind of issues with these magazines that come out that look fantastic, and you sit down with them and it's like having a McDonald's. You need another meal, and there's nothing in there. And I think, but I think the reason I brought Sleek with me is I think Mario's, I'm super impressed with it. And I don't mean that sound patronizing at all. Mario is a really talented guy. But actually, the value of the content that's in there, it's art, fashion, there's literature, there's philosophy in there, there's design. It does look beautiful, but I did get an awful lot out of it when I spent some time with it as well. The other thing that I think is worth saying is the cover price is £10. And I think, again, an issue that comes up an awful lot in this sector is things that might be beautiful and might be super interesting, but are priced at such a way that's going to exclude a lot of people. And I think what Sleek has done is hit that real sweet spot between those two things.
So you're saying price as a point of, I guess, of attraction, but also I just picked up this second, and I feel there's already value for money in it. Where sometimes you just think, oh God, I've parted with, 10, 15, 20 euros sometimes, and it's barely going to make it out of the bag when you get home.
And that's super interesting, though, is that experience, because we in the industry get very used to spending a lot of time and analysing magazines when they drop through our letterboxes. But the real experience is exactly what you've just done. It's people plucking them off, oftentimes the real experience can be people plucking them off the shelves in Magma or off a newsstand. And it is, what is that feeling straight away? Does it look beautiful? Am I getting value for money from this? Does this cover the kind of things that I'm interested in? And so I think, the fact that you've had that immediate hit from that is a super success that Mario and his team have pulled off.
Finally, you found something quite interesting, really striking cover. It's a Subtopia magazine. It's a Swedish title. And just, a great image, wonderfully styled. And I would say I've seen this girl before. She's in a gray sweatshirt, very, I would call it an array of weaves on her head. Now, again, neither of us can read Swedish, and it'd be interesting to sort of see the position of this magazine. But just going back to the cover, there's a provocation, because this is probably a girl maybe part of the Syrian or Iraqi diaspora, I think, and you know, part of sort of the friction, I think, that we currently see in contemporary Sweden in many respects, then with this wonderful, just this yellow border, which is really, really striking. But tell us about the title.
I mean, it's one of the enormous perks of my job that people send me magazines from all over the world, I'm sure, like you do to yourself, you know, all the time. And, you know, for something to immediately jump out as something a bit different and a bit special is quite rare, but Subtopia did that. It's got the cover line, The Power of Art, and that's the only bit of English I can find in the entire thing. Everything else is purely in Swedish. So apologies to any pronunciations or anything I've got wrong about this, but I have done some research into it to try and, you know, locate it a little bit. Essentially, Subtopia is it's a kind of an arts organization. It's a physical space that brings together 80 organizations just south of Stockholm in a place called Botkyrka. Is it spelt? And I'm sure I've murdered it. Look at that, you see, Tyler. Yeah. This is what, you know, why we work so well together. It's a space that's devoted to contemporary circus and film and urban art and dance and music. And as I understand it, this is the magazine they produce to kind of bring together some of those interesting people and themes and ideas that work out of this space near Stockholm. What particularly struck me, and I've never been to Sweden, and my knowledge of, I'm going to have to defer to your knowledge of Scandinavia here, but I felt it was, you know, a lot of the Scandinavian design we tend to see, it's nice that it's very, very different to this. It's very clean, very minimal, and very kind of pared back. And this has a real kind of riot, you know, illustrations, things scrawled across spreads and over text, and it has an energy to it. And again, we talked about that hit of when you pick up a magazine. I think a sense of energy can be hugely important and hugely attractive when you're faced with a wall of different public.
And if you're faced of a wall of publications, or at least everything, of course, you know, aside from your double hit here, which your split cover run, which I always think is interesting, but sadly, split cover runs, unless for sort of the real diehards who want to have both. I always, you know, in my naive early days in this industry, was, oh well, at least you maybe get a 30% uplift because, you know, there's that many loyal fans, but actually there's not that many people who are that crazy who really feel they've got to have both covers. I would absolutely buy both. But anyway, your title aside, what would you say? Value for money. You can only take one thing with you in the sun wherever you are in the world this weekend. What would you reach for? And you can include Dumbo Feather in the mix and everything else you brought in.
I think of all of them, for the sheer eclecticism of it, I'd go for Sleek.
Yeah.
It wrong-footed me quite a few times, and I find that an utterly dizzying, heady kind of experience when you're flicking through a magazine.
No, my vote's with Sleek as well. And again, I think this is something which could also, it wouldn't just get you through an afternoon. I think it also has those moments of pause where they've paced it right too, which you think, no, I don't want to, you know, I actually want to go and sit in a beer garden, do something else, but I can come back to it. And I think that's also, I think, a real measure of success, that it's not a single sitting magazine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that brings us to the end of this 139th edition of The Stack with me, Tyler Berlay. Thanks very much to Rob Alderson from Printed Pages. Our producer, as ever, has been David Pleasant, our studio manager. Also, as ever, has been Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, then drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Remember, we're back at the same time next Saturday in this very same seat. And of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, for me, goodbye.